WOOC correspondents Julia Kavicki and Trayvon Votrin sat down in the studio with Tyler O'Brien to discuss his work with the Water Resources Institute at Cornell University.
Hi, my name's Felix Yang. I'm a student at Cornell. And this summer, I'm working on a project that's primarily concerned with FEMA buyout properties. Basically, it's a federally funded program that targets emergency flooding, emergency hurricane stuff to give funds to communities that were hit hardest by those. So exactly what FEMA buyouts are specifically targeting properties that have been frequently flooded. And once a property is flooded, its housing value typically goes down until eventually it becomes one or so, a dollar or so. And because of the cheapening value, the people that live in these houses typically can't sell their houses and move out because the value keeps spiraling down. So FEMA allows local governments to work with private homeowners to buy out their properties at their original price before the flooding ever happened, so that they have the opportunity to move out of their homes. And once that happens, once the local governments own the homes with the funds from FEMA, they are encouraged to use that land productively. And that what that typically means is they encourage it to restore it to its natural habitat. So usually the base is grassland. And from beyond that, you can make it into, let's say, a park, make it back into a wetland if possible. But what tends to happen is the house is demolished and no one does anything with the property because there's typically not enough funding to actually redevelop it. Because what tends to happen is once you lose that house, you also lose a taxing resource for the local government. They can no longer tax that house for the property value. That's the gist of what I'm doing, studying what happens to bought out lands after they are bought out. The people that tend to participate in this are homeowners that continue to live in those properties that flood. That's the reason why they're participating in it, because that's their only home, so they don't really have a choice to live or not to live in there. I assume there are cases where there are vacant properties that are flooded. That might be more commercial than residential, though.
So what have been your primary findings thus far of what happens to those sites?
Okay, so coming into the summer, I did some literature review and found that in one of the documents that I read, that approximately 40% of bought-out properties just were vacant lots. Vacant lots meaning just a patch of grass and no impervious surfaces. Impervious meaning no concrete. So things that water is able to soak into the ground in, so typically soil. And that was also the case. So 40% was the biggest category. That was the most common thing found on these bought out properties. And that was also the case in the sites that we were looking at in the cities located in the Susquehanna, such as Binghamton, Johnson City, and Vestal, that area.
And what does that mean for how site development goes forward in the future?
So if the studies end up finding that there are a lot of properties that aren't being used most productively, a outreach could be made to both the community but also the local governments to see, like, why aren't you developing this land? Is there anything that the community wants that could be done, like, let's say, build a local park, or if it's a really big piece of land, perhaps, and it's right next to the river, perhaps build something akin to Dumbo in Brooklyn, New York City, which is a really nice riverfront park that's under the Manhattan Bridge.
So, like, connected with that, like, kind of, like, make, like, boat launches and stuff? Like, if it's, like, a property on the river, can you, like, make kind of, like, whatever you want on that land, or?
If it's owned by the local government, which the study that I'm doing says that they are, it is completely up to the local government, as long as it... So FEMA, federal government, gives several guidelines to which you can, what kind of stuff you can do in this land, and it typically says you can't redevelop it so that there's a bunch of concrete, and what that does is you recreate the environment that causes the flooding again, which was you create a lot of surface where all that runoff goes into the river, and if there's more runoff into the river, you swell a river more and more, and you increase the risk of flooding. So if it's a boat launch, I mean, it's possible if you can somehow find a way to incorporate green infrastructure into this boat launch to the point where you're not infringing on the FEMA protocols, it should be okay.
So is there any aspect of sort of community involvement in the design of these sites going forward?
There should be. It's the study kind of really just started, especially in that particular part of New York, Binghamton, the greater Binghamton area. The community definitely should be involved because that's who's going to use it. It's not going to be people from other communities. And Binghamton is sort of part of the post-industrial America in the sense that there's a lot of people leaving the cities rather than entering it. So this might be an opportunity to redevelop it to the point where it becomes an attraction so that people actually start moving into these parts of America rather than moving out.
Where is this program most effective, and like, where is it like not?
It was originally used in, I think it was the Mississippi flood of 1996, and that was an inland river flood. But now it's especially being used in post-Sandy areas in New York City and Jersey, as well as post, I think, Hurricane Irene in 2011. And that's kind of where all the properties that I was looking at in Binghamton were affected. So the most widespread use of this program was probably in New York City and Jersey after Hurricane Sandy, in which I think, if I get the number right, something like 500 homeowners actually participated in the program along Staten Island, because Staten Island was, along with, I think, Queens, was really heavily affected. And there's this program called, oh man, I don't remember the program, but on the coast, on the side of Jersey that's close to Staten Island, there's this really effective program that bought out most of the neighborhood in the course of 2 years, 2 or 3 years since Sandy. And that's an example of one of the more successful efforts to participate in this program. And it took a while to begin to build momentum, because a lot of people see participating in this program as sort of like a defeat, because we tend to see retreating from environments, from environmental dangers, as a weakness, because humans are supposed to be dominant and kind of have this control over nature. But as climate change worsens, these sort of problems will only become more unpredictable and possibly more intense. So retreating from waterfronts, including coastal and river floodplains, is something that people are becoming more and more open to. And I think that's a good thing, because we shouldn't be building on them in the first place. Yeah.
Well, why do we have to retreat? Why can't like people just like start making more electric cars and stuff like that? And like why are we still polluting? Like you see all this damage that is happening because of all this pollution, and nobody's like paying much attention to it.
So we're at a point in history where the damage that's been done is probably not reversible, and what we have to do is kind of mitigate the damage that will come, that is yet to come. So that includes warmer weather and rising sea levels. And it's not to say that we shouldn't take efforts like, you know, reduce carbon emissions by driving less, and if you drive electric cars. That's not what I'm saying. It's more like, because of what's already been done, because of the already established damages, there are steps that must be taken to ensure that human lives aren't endangered. And they are endangered if you build along at-risk places next to waterfronts.
Well, if we stop, I'm just saying, like, if we stop now, they're in the future, like the future generations, if we stop now, they're gonna be better.
Yeah.
And they can probably save like the human race, you know. But right now we're just like, we just keep polluting, and then the humans might go extinct because this world is just gonna run us right over.
Well, I tend to have a much more positive view of humanity in the sense that, well, think about it in history, in the Cold War, when we are on the brink of destroying the entire planet at every step of the way between Soviet Union and United States. But somehow we made it out alive, and that kind of apocalyptic view of things was replaced by climate change. And, I mean, in the sense that danger of everything's going to end tomorrow was kind of replaced by climate change. And I'm not saying that it's not unfounded, but I'm saying I believe that there's always hope, and that humans, we're kind of like cockroaches. We'll always find a way out. We'll always live.
Yeah, I believe that.
But yeah, I agree with the sentiment. We definitely should be doing more.
That was Felix Yang speaking with correspondents Trayvon Votrin and Julia Kavicki.